Okay, we're starting here with the two dots on Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. The quote from the Mishnah: Shol Kli Mechaviro Me'erev Yom Tov. Someone who borrows a utensil from the friend on Erev Yom Tov, then it has a din like the Shoel, like the borrower. Where it says Pshita, of course, they have possession of it before Shabbat, before Yom Tov, and therefore, by definition, it should take on the properties of the individual who's holding it. Lotzricha Shelo Misarolo Elo BeYom Tov. He didn't give it to him until on Yom Tov itself. So he borrowed it on Erev Yom Tov, but he only got possession of it on Yom Tov itself. That it's not in his possession. That it is in his possession, even though he doesn't have physical possession of it, since he has permission to take it, and he is going to take it. It's as if it's in his possession. And that's Messiah the Rabbi Yochanan. That helps Rabbi Yochanan's position. Dam Rabbi Yochanan, Ashuel Kulimi Chaveiro Me'erev Yom Tov. Afopi Shalo Nitanolo Elami Yom Tov. So he borrows it on Erev Yom Tov, even though he doesn't get it, or he's not given it until Yom Tov itself. Harehu Kiragle Ashuel has the din like the borrower. So as differentiated from, like you're suggesting over here, Dine Kinyan, when you really become culpable for the item, which is once you take possession of it. Over here, we're talking about Tchumim. Tchumim is trying to set the boundaries for the object. There, it's not necessarily about ownership per se, kinyan per se. It's about intent at that point. Who intends to have it? Who intends to utilize it during that period of time? And so therefore, Tchumim are not governed by, I would say, the regular dinim of kinyan and mamon in that way. They have to do with what is the intent for this kli. Who is going to be using it, utilizing it over Yom Tov or Shabbat? And the borrower is the one. He's granted permission already. And by the fact that he's granted permission, the assumption of both the borrower and the lender is that it's going to be in the possession of the borrower. So I think it's differentiated in that way from a regular din of kinyan. All right, Yom Tov Keraglei HaMashi'il. So if he only borrows it on Yom Tov itself, then it has the din of the lender. Because again, the lender coming into that point in time assumed that he was going to keep the kli for the duration of Yom Tov, duration of Shabbat. When it says Pshita, Otzricha Derogil Vishail Minei, he has an individual who every Yom Tov comes and borrows from him. He knows he's a regular borrower. So Maudetema Bershute Kamukim Lei. So what are you going to suggest that by definition or default it goes into his possession? Meaning that, because he knows that it's coming, so he intends for it to be in the possession of the borrower. I mean, similar to what we just said before, that it's all about the intent. Here, his intent is to lend it out, like every other Yom Tov. Kamash Malon, may ma'amar dilma mishkach inish achrina, v'azil v'shal minei. Maybe he found another guy to lend him. Finally, he found someone else to give him what he wanted, and he's not coming this time. He's not coming this Yom Tov. So because of that, since he still has that residual possibility that he won't borrow it, then he maintains ownership, or he maintains his mind that it's his, and he's going to utilize it, and therefore it stays within his tchum. Chayin Aisha Shashala Michaverta. Similar to a woman who borrows from her friend. Here she's making challah, she's making bread. So she has the flour, she borrows the water, she borrows the spices. Over there we said the same thing, that the bread is limited to the areas of the two women. Since she only borrows it on Yom Tov itself, so therefore, the bread is a combination of materials, one from the woman who contributed the flour, one from the woman who lent her the water and the spices. And so since you have that joint, quasi-joint ownership over here, that forces you to say that the challah or the bread is limited to the space where both of them can walk, the overlap between them. Kisalik Rabbi Abba, when he headed up to Eretz Yisrael, Amar, Yehei Rava, Deim Amilta Ditkabel. Says the Hiratzom, that I should say something that will be accepted. I mean that I'll say something that's intelligent, that they will accept over there. I won't embarrass myself when I go over there. Kisalik, so you got there. Ashkechei the Rabbi Yochanan, v'Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, v'Rabbi Zeira. So he found these three individuals discussing a sugya, v'amilo. Some say it's these three individuals, Rabbi Bo, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, v'Rabbi Yitzchak Nafko. Yatzvei v'ka'amrei. And their question revolves around our Mishnah. Amai, why is it true by the woman that the lender of the water and the spices has impact on the bread? So coming into Yom Tov, this woman has flour. The other woman has the water and the spices. On Yom Tov, she goes and borrows the water and the spices, bakes them into her challah, And now we say the challah is governed by both of their tchumin, whatever their overlap is. The Gemara wants to know, am I viliftel my mumelach the gabi isa? Why don't we say that the water and the salt are batel to the isa now, which is the full bread, but basically the flour. The flour is the main ingredient. These are minor ingredients. I mean, obviously you need water to make dough, but they're still not items that are so significant that you would say that they take on a life of their own where you could stop the woman from moving. You wouldn't say that it's batel. Rashi says over here, the reason that they want to say it's batel is because it's miyut. It's so small. Zutre de gabe isa de nefisha. The water and the spices, by the time you baked it, become insignificant in relative to the dough or the bread itself. That's the way Rashi terms it. Rashi is basically saying what you're suggesting, which is they're insignificant. If they're insignificant, why aren't they batel? Tosafot, on the other hand, says, wait, that shouldn't matter. Because here you have a davar sheish lo matirin. A davar sheish lo matirin, avifilu ve'elef lo batil. So it doesn't matter how insignificant it is, it's still going to take on significance just because it's going to be mutar. The next day, you can move it anywhere you want. So the mere fact that it has a heter coming up, it shouldn't be batel, Tosafot says. So yesh lomar, Tosafot says, that's hani mile min bimino. When we say that, afilu be'elef lo batil, when it's davar sheish lo matirin, that's only true when you have two items that are the same. But when you have min she'eno mito, like over here, where there are two different minim, then you would say it's batel, even if it's davar sheish lo matirin. That's the first statement of Tosafot. Then Tosafot makes the second statement, which has importance probably throughout the sugya, which is behold the lo dami the shari isurim. It's not similar to other isurim. The davar talui b'tam. Every other isur, the whole issue at hand is the flavor. How much flavor does it give? What's the impact of the flavor? Over here, the isur is a derivative of the ownership. Whose bread is this? The bread belongs to the woman who contributed the flour and borrowed the other ingredients. It's her bread. So tchumim, you're right. Tchumim, if I looked at it in a standalone, in a vacuum, is an isur. So then you should debate things about isur. But how are tchumim determined? Tchumim are determined by ownership and by what we call mamon, by the monetary ownership. So over here, when you look at the bread, yeah, in terms of Isur and Heter, you're right. You could ask, oh, the water and the spices are not batel, or maybe they are batel, so on and so forth. But you could also argue, and that's the more important point here, is it's all about ownership. Since it's all about ownership, then that should be the determining factor. So even if you say that they're not batel because it's a davar sheish lo matirin, still it should be batel just because the isa is just called this woman's bread. And since it's her bread, that should be governed by regards to tchumim. So again here, when we talk about the isa here, it's a derivative of the monetary ownership. And that has impact. So because of that, it should be batel. The maim melach the gavi isa. So Amar lo Rabbi Abba. So here Rabbi Abba gets his big chance to speak up. And he wants to do a good job. Haray shenitarev lo kav chitim basara kabim chitim shel chaviro. If he had a kav worth of wheat that dropped into his friend's 10 kav worth of wheat, yochal hala v'chadi, says the other individual who is the larger owner, he should go ahead and eat the whole pile and just enjoy himself and laugh all the way through. When you say bitol, so you're saying over here it's batel, that ownership disappears. So over here too, you want to suggest that whenever you have bitul applies to ownership. So say you have something that you and your friend have different items, the same item, and then they fall together. So your friend has a larger quantity of the item, we're going to say it's batel, and as if you don't own it anymore, it disappears. The other guy can enjoy now 11 kav of wheat, and you are out of luck because it's batel. You can't say bitul, or you can't apply bitul in a case where ownership is at stake. When ownership's at stake, you don't just say, batel, goodbye, you don't own it anymore. That doesn't work. So that is what Rabbi Abba is suggesting is the reason here. You can't just say that the water and the spices disappear here because, well, it's not only integral to making the bread, but it's her ownership. You can't just say the other woman's ownership is overridden as if it doesn't exist anymore. What? She doesn't get her water back? She doesn't get her spices back? Yes, she does. She owns them. Now, Tosafot asks, why don't we ask this question everywhere in Shas? Every time you tell me that something's batel, why don't we bring up Rabbi Abba's position here, which is, Well, bittul shouldn't take place. So Tosafot says over here, and it's the same distinction he just drew on the previous amud, which is, can't ask this question all the time, because there's a difference between when you're talking about bittul with isur, and bittul with ownership. So again here, the same thing comes up here, that tchumim are unusual. That normally, we're talking about isur. You talk about nevela, shchuta, you talk about things that are mutar and asur. Over there, you can talk about bittul. When it comes to ownership, you can't eliminate other people's ownership. Other people's ownership exists, even if they are a small portion. If you're a partner, just because you have a smaller partnership means that you're batel and your partnership doesn't matter? No, it matters. It just matters in that proportion, but it still matters. So over here too, what Rabbi Abba is suggesting is that by tchumin, even though you're dealing with the question of isur, the isur derives from ownership. And over here, ownership has to remain distinct because you can't wipe out someone's ownership just because of the principle of bittul. Achiku ale, they laughed at him. So poor guy, all he had wanted was that he would say something that was intelligent, and here he says something and they laugh at him. Amalu gutaihu shakle says, what? Did I take your cloaks? Did I take your clothing that you guys are all laughing over here? So hadur achiku alei. They laughed at him again. Meaning that they didn't accept his position. They thought he was wrong. Now they're going to explain why. And now the Gemara is going to debate about why was it that they were laughing. So amalu shaya shapir avud tachiku alei. Vashaya says, they were acting properly when they laughed at him because what he said makes no sense. Ma'ishna chitin b'se'urin deloka amar luhu. How come in his example he gave an example of wheat and wheat? Your wheat falls into the other individual's wheat. How come he didn't give an example of wheat that falls into barley? Because da'avale min she'enu mino. Umin she'enu mino batil. He didn't give that example because those are different or distinct or differentiated minim. And everybody agrees when you have min she'enu mino, it's batel. Chitim b'chitim nami. So also chitim b'chitim nihi del Rabbi Yehuda lo batel. According to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mino is not batel. The Rabbanon miftal batel. According to the Rabbanon, it is batel. So why is his example any different than the case of se'orim and chitim? And he would agree by se'orim and chitim that it's batel. So why doesn't he say the same thing by chitim and chitim? It should also be batel. Amrle Rav Safra, so Rav Safra says back to Rav Ushaya, Moshe. Now Moshe over here has different meanings. Rashi translates it differently all over Shas. One place he calls it Gadol Ador. Moshe means like Gadol Ador, the great one. Other places he just means Talmud Chacham. And over here Rashi translates Moshe is, I swear by the name of Moshe. Moshe, Tapir Kamart? He says, is what you're saying really make sense? Did they not hear of the memra of Rabbi Chia Ketosfa Mishmei Derav? Haborer Tzrorot Migerno Shochabero. Person who picks out the pebbles from his friend's silo, from the wheat of his friend. Chayav v'shalem lo d'mei chitim. When he pays him back, he doesn't pay him back nothing. Pebbles are worthless. So he doesn't pay him back nothing, but he has to pay him back the value of wheat. Alma kila chasre. From here you see that he detracted from the weight. Achanami kila chasre. Over there, when people sell wheat, they sell wheat as is. When they sell the wheat as is, then the weight includes the wheat, the pebbles, the dirt, everything that's in there. So by going ahead and being borer the items prior to his selling of it, you just lost him money. And money that will be paid for wheat. The value of wheat is paid for even though the pebbles are mixed in it. So basically, you're basically paying the price of wheat for pebbles. Because that's going to be in the weight and you're going to pay it. Assuming that that's incorporated when a person buys the wheat, they know that they're going to lose a certain amount to waste. But that's the price that they pay because they assume the wheat's in there. If he already took out all the pebbles and he goes and sells the wheat at that price, then he is going to lose money because people assume they're going to get a net. And he's selling them the net now, and he's not selling them the gross number, and so he's getting underpaid for it. When you pull out the pebbles, you've done him a tremendous disservice here. You've cost him wheat. So that's why, even though you're pulling out pebbles that are worthless, nevertheless, it still has value, and value like wheat. All right, so then we'll say the same thing over here. Kila chasre. Even though the water and the spices are insignificant here, even though they have no significance vis-a-vis the itzah or vis-a-vis the challah as a whole, nevertheless, they have kilach asrei. If you were to pull the water, you were to pull the spices, then when you sell the bread would not, obviously it wouldn't even be bread, but you're causing a loss. If that's the case, then ownership matters. This has value. The water and the spices, even though you can't see them, even though they're insignificant relative to the other object, they still are significant to the totality of what you are selling. Same thing by the chitim. Even though the pebbles in of themselves are insignificant, and if you look at it, you call it wheat. You don't call it wheat with pebbles. You call it wheat. Nevertheless, because they are part and parcel of it, and they give it heft, and they make a difference to it, you have to pay the value of them. So do over here. The water and the spices make a difference. Since they make a difference, they have value. Since they have value, they're not batel, even though they're insignificant relative to the totality that's here, even though relative to the isa, relative to the flour, they're insignificant. So he says, you're making a point, basically, about bitol, which has to do with isur. You're making a point that when it comes to bitol, it makes no difference if it's min b'mino or min she'enu mino. It's always batel. It's interesting, Tosafot takes up over here and says that we must paskin like the Rabbanan, that by min b'mino is batel, because the Gemara takes that as a given, that min she'enu mino is batel. Min b'mino, that's just Rabbi Yehuda. Everybody else thinks it is batel, and that's the halacha. And the Gemara moves forward with that. So Tosafot says, from here it sounds like min b'mino is batel, because the Gemara just takes it as a given. Now, that's by Isur. So by Isur, we don't differentiate. But over here, when you're talking about mamon, when you're talking about ownership, you're talking about value, then value has significance even when it's insignificant. And they prove that from the pebbles. Even the most insignificant item takes on the properties of the item that it's in. It becomes like wheat because it's mixed with the wheat. So too, the water and the spices become like bread. They become like challah, isa, because they are mixed in there. And therefore, they take on the properties of the whole, not the individual properties of what they are by themselves, which is insignificant. So even though mayim and melach are nothing anywhere else, but once they're a part of the bread, they are significant because they are bread. So he says you have to differentiate. And Rabbi Abba was right in what he said, and I don't know why they were laughing at him. So Amar le Abayi. Now Abayi says back to Rav Safra, Lo shani leimar ben mamon sheish lo tovim, lo mamon shein lo tovim. Now, you made a distinction between mamon and isur. That's how you got to your distinction. You said, okay, isur is batel. Mamon has significance, and since mamon has significance, you can't be mevatel it. Abayi comes back to him and says there are different forms of ownership, and those forms of ownership might make a difference. If you have mamon sheish lo tovim, someone who is a claimant, someone who says this is mine and I can take it back now and I own it now, then you can argue that the other person caused them a loss or it has significance. So in the case of the pebbles, that's someone who has monetary value and he has a claim right away. You took my weight out and now I'm losing money because I'm selling the chita without the pebbles in it, so I'm losing money on this. I want my money back right away. Over here by the mayim and the melach, or the mayim and the tavlin, when that is lent, she will not come and claim it or take it back till a couple of days from now, at the time period afterwards. Today, on Yom Tov itself, she's not going to say, give me my water back, give me my melach back. So therefore, the ownership is a lower form of ownership. Basically, that's what Abayi is suggesting, that what you're talking about is a high form of ownership, which is ownership where I'm going to have a claim and I want it back now. In those cases, you can say that it has significance, even though it's an insignificant item. On the other hand, when you lend something to somebody and you don't plan on asking for it back until later or until for a couple of days from now, and even the item that you get back is not necessarily the item that you lent, in that the item you lent is gone, then you're going to get back another item, which is water and melach, to replace it, because these are fungible items, so therefore that's what you're going to get back. So over there, you can suggest that ownership isn't so significant. And if ownership isn't so significant, maybe it is batel. Maybe you can't say that ownership always has significance. Maybe that's true when it's real, full-fledged ownership. But over here, where it's not full-fledged ownership, maybe it does not have significance. That's a biased suggestion over here, that your distinction may not be true. The comparison between the case of the pebbles and the case of the mayim and melach are not necessarily on par, because you're talking about different forms of ownership. So now, Amarlei, Rav Safra says back to Abaye, Veli tameich, according to you who makes this distinction, Hadam Rav Chista nevela betela b'shkuta, lefi she'efshar l'shkuta she'taseh nevela. Shkuta ena betela b'nevela, lefi she'efshar l'nevela she'taseh shkuta. So here we're talking about in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that min b'mino is not batel. So here you have different pieces of meat. Some pieces are nevela, some pieces are shkuta. So some are kosher meat, and some are non-kosher meat or nevela. Are those considered to be min b'mino, or min she'enu mino? So you would think that those are all min b'mino, it's all pieces of meat, there's nothing that distinguishes them outwardly. So you would think they're all the same. Along comes, Rav Chisda says, depends which way it is. Nevela b'teila b'shkuta. If the majority is shkuta, then nevela is batel. Why? Lefi she'ef shah the shkuta she'taseh nevela. Shkuta can never become a nevela. A nevela is metameh b'magah u'masah. That has a certain level of tumah that kosher meat can never attain. Once the meat is shechted and you have kosher meat here, it cannot attain the tumah of nevela. By definition, therefore, they are two different things. Because they're min she'enu mino, because the shkuta can never look like the nevela. And because of that, the nevela is batel inside of the shkuta. On the other hand, shkuta ain't a batela b'nevela. If the nevela is the majority, and the shkuta you want to be mevatel it, that doesn't work. The fish efsha the nevela shetaseh shkuta. Because nevela can look like a shkuta. Now, obviously, if it's a nevela, it's dead, and you can never make it shkuta. So what does that mean? That means that nevela that is tamei can become ostamei. How does it become ostamei? Is if it starts to rot or go bad. Once it starts to go bad, then a nevela looks like a shkuta, and there is no tuma anymore. Neither of them have tuma, and now they're exactly alike. They both don't have tuma to them, and therefore they're the same, and that's why it remains min b'mino. The question here is, if you touch the pile, if you touch the meat that's all together, are you tamei or are you not tamei? So in the first case where the shkuta is the majority, he says that you are not tamei. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree you're not tamei, that it's min she'enu mino, because the shkuta can never become tamei like the nevela. Therefore it remains min she'enu mino and they're batel. On the other hand, if the nevela is the majority and you have shkuta in there, we're going to touch it, we're going to tell you the safek about the tumah here because the shkuta is not betela. Because the nevela can turn into shkuta, because the nevela eventually could lose its tuma and look exactly like the shkuta, and that means it remains min be mino and it's not batel. So hachanami techid le balim lo batela. So you're going to suggest to me that if it has owners, they wouldn't be batel. You're telling me that having ownership versus not having owners makes a difference, and therefore it will impact over here. If it had owners over here, the nevela would not be batel with the shkuta. So if you have the majority shkuta and then you have nevela, we said it's batel because it's min she'enu mino. You're going to tell me all of a sudden over here that if it has owners, that makes a difference and it's not batel anymore because it's significant. All of a sudden ownership is significant and therefore it can't be batel. If you're going to tell me, yeah, that's right. If you have ownership, it's significant. Ba'atanya, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, chepze hefker, konim shvita. Chepze hefker, who have no owners, they're koneh shvita where they are. Alpha pish en lam balim. Even though they have no owners. Domim, kemish yesh lam balim. It's as if they do have owners. So you see over here that objects with ownership and without ownership, we make no distinction. Just like by tchumin, at least according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Tosafot takes up the issue that the Rabbanan argue on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, but he says maybe even the Rabbanan would agree in this case. You can look in Tosafot to see that. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri himself didn't say this explicitly. We infer this from his words or his position. That Chefzei Hefker take on a life of their own, and even though they have no ownership, they're konish shvita where they are. That tells you that ownership is not significant in determining where the shvita is. Whether you have ownership or don't have ownership, the item takes on shvita. So that's the first stage. The second stage is let's go over to nevela and shkuta. So just like by tchumin, ownership doesn't matter, and there's still tchumim govern, and the shvita takes place wherever the object is, so too by nevela and shkuta, ownership doesn't matter. Now if ownership doesn't matter, that means that whether it's batel or not batel has nothing to do with ownership, it simply has to do with whether it's the shkuta that's the majority or the nevela that is the majority. Now take that one step further. In our case over here, ownership over here shouldn't matter. Whether the Mayim and Melech have significance shouldn't matter whether it's full-fledged ownership or only ownership where she lent it and she's only going to get it back later or ask for it later or not ask for it at all. In that case, ownership shouldn't matter. Ownership, whether it's a full-fledged ownership or a partial ownership or no ownership at all, that shouldn't matter to the case. The fact that there is Mayim and Melech, that should be enough to be the determining factor. And whether it's full-fledged ownership or partial ownership, that should have significance by itself. Abaye's question to Rav Safra is, don't you distinguish between Mamon She'esh Lo Tovim, Mamon She'en Lo Tovim? ownership that is full-fledged versus non-full-fledged ownership? And he says back to him, Rav Safra, no. We don't make such a distinction. I have all these cases where ownership makes absolutely no difference. In the Veilan Shchuta, no difference whether there's full-fledged or not full-fledged ownership. By Tchumim, no difference whether there's full-fledged ownership or not. So too in our case, this should be no difference whether it's full-fledged ownership or not. So then he says back to him, wait a minute, Amalei, mikamadami tisura le mamona? Why are you comparing isur to mamon? Isura batil, mamona lo batil. Wait, when you're talking about isur, and you're determining whether the isur is batel or not batel, ownership is irrelevant. Ownership is irrelevant in isur because what you're trying to determine is the status of the object. Mutar or asur. Ownership has no bearing in that case. It has to do with the chepza itself, whether it's a chepza isur, a chepza eter, no matter who owns it. Ownership is irrelevant there. Talking about mamon, ownership is significant because that's all that matters, is whose is it? Who is the owner here? And therefore, maybe gradations of ownership will matter when we're talking about bitul legabei mamon. The distinction also runs deeper. This goes back to what we discussed in Tosafot a number of times, which is, what is the question here? Is the question a question of isur? Or is the question here a question of mamon? So our Mishnah remains problematic now because you are talking about differences in issues. As Rashi says over here, Stovan answered up our Mishnah. Even if you have full-fledged ownership, you should say, Levato. Should be batel. How are you comparing monetary loss to isur? Amar rabbanan levatel beruba aval mamona lo batel muat berov. That when it comes to isur, you can always talk about bitela, but when you're talking about ownership or money, that's not the case. The od kanuya mamona muat the balav shel meruba. To say that the lower one is owned by the greater one. Matzinda nami lo karminan delifka rov mamona etel chaverta laf seed. Nobody is suggesting that she's going to lose all her money here. Ela isur tchumim yeshla bahu v'dekash lan debatel. Our question is only about isur. Our question is not about mamon. Now, it's true, the way Tosafot phrased it before, it's a little more difficult. Tosafot before says, well, isn't the whole isur here determined by ownership? So maybe mamon does matter over here by the isur. The conclusion, according to Abaye, is that that doesn't govern. Over here, isur is the question, and ownership is not relevant by isur. Ownership is relevant when you're talking about monetary matters. It's not relevant when you're talking about isurim. And tchumim here is a problem of isur. So why isn't it batel?
So in the end, everyone will agree, by isur v'heter, ownership is irrelevant. And the only question at hand is isur, heter, and their relationship. And that is the case by the Shchuta and the Nevela. On the other hand, by the Gabe Mamon, when it comes to monetary matters, everybody will agree that you cannot be Mevatel ownership. That's the case of the pebbles. No matter how insignificant the ownership is, it still has monetary significance, and therefore it's not Batel. You could argue there about the level of ownership, and that might be a distinction that is drawn or an argument that's had as to how high a level of ownership you need to have in order to make it significant. But everybody agrees, at least, when you have mamon sheish lo tovim, that that's significant enough that it's not batel. The question here comes up in tchumim. Tchumim has two aspects to it. It has an aspect of isur. It also has an aspect of balut. As Tosafot has been saying all along here, that balut is what contributes to the isur over here. And so that's the machloket. According to Rav Safra, Rav Yavo is saying that we're talking about an ownership issue over here. Yes, there's a derivative of Isur that comes out of it, but ownership is the base of the Isur, and therefore it's not Batel. The others that argue on them, like Abaye and those that laughed in Eretz Yisrael, believe that Tchumim is an issue of Isur. Ownership is not a factor here, simply Isur, and so it makes no difference what the ownership is, it simply matters whether the Isur is Batel or not Batel. And in this case, it will be Batel because the items are insignificant. So for Rabbi Ava, according to Rabbi Safra, the reason it's not batel in our Mishnah is because it's mamon. And for Abaye, it is batel in our Mishnah because it's isur. And now we have to come up with a different reason as to why it's not batel. So Gemara says, v'tai mamai. Okay, you don't accept Rabbi Ava's position. You don't accept Rabbi Ava's statement that it's all about ownership here and ownership is not batel. Because you think it's not ownership, you think it's isur here. Even though it's the ownership that contributes to the isur, nevertheless, you think it's a question of isur, then why don't we have it be batel? So, Abaye Amar Gzeira Shemeta Seisa B'Shutafut. Problem is that they may make a isa jointly. We're afraid here that, yes, one person has significance, one person is insignificant in this case.
What happens if they really have a full-fledged partnership? And they make together, they come and contribute, and they make an isa together. You can also say there that it doesn't matter. There it does matter. So it's a gzeira otu. Problem, when you do a bishuta foot on equal footing, over there the iser does matter, and they're going to be governed by both of the tchumim, because then they are equal partners. Whereas over here, where there's one insignificant and significant item, you're right. It would only go to the significant item. But b'gzeira otu, we say no. Rav amar, tivalin l'tamei avide. Spices are put in for their flavor. B'taima lo batil. And flavor is not batel. So since you have an item, even though it's insignificant, since it's a major component of the final product in the fact that it contributes taste, taste is never batel, because it's going to be there in the end. So even though the items themselves are insignificant, what they contribute is significant. Rashi says that Abaye and Rava are not arguing because Abaye is speaking about an isa, whereas Rava is speaking about a kedera. So Abaye is discussing the issue of the dough, whereas Rava is discussing the issue of a cooked item. And that's why they do not argue. Tosafot says that that's difficult to say. But rather, Abaye's statement applies both to an isa and a kedera. And Rava's statement applies both to an isa and a kedera. And that just like you can have a isa b'shutafut, you can have a kedera b'shutafut. And so Abaye's reasoning applies equally to isa and kedera. And just like Rava says that the spices are significant in a kedera, so too the water is significant in the dough or in the bread, because it's a major component or major ingredient in what makes it possible to make the dough. So their positions apply equally to dough and kedera, and that means that they would be arguing and not necessarily agreeing in their positions. Here it's a problem. It's a davar sheyesh lo matirim, because you can simply wait. If you wait, lamachar yolichal o ayom yochlu kan. You can either tomorrow you can move it wherever you want, or today you can eat it where you are, and you don't have a problem at all. Now, Tosafot over here, it goes back to his original statement that davar sheyesh lo matirim only has impact by min b'mino. It doesn't have impact by min she'eino mino. So why over here does davar sheyesh lo matirim have any impact? So Tosafot gives two answers over here. He says, Gabi tchumim shiny de chamiri, kilo havi min b'mino v'alma. Says tchumim is a very high level isur de rabbanan. Since that's the case, it's very stringent. We say it's zif, it's min b'mino. And davar sheyesh lo material impacts. Or, oh yoshlamar kevin de isa ina nilosha el yadei amayim. Since the water is so significant in making bread, that it's as ilu min echad, it's as if they are one thing. You can only get dough when you mix flour and water. Once you have dough, the flour and water now are joined into a single entity, and you can't distinguish them, you can't differentiate them, can't separate them at that point. And because of that, it is now like min bi mino. Because if either one of those items, davar sheyesh lo matirim, has an impact, b'chol davar sheyesh lo matirim, afilu be'elef lo batil. That's why it's not batel over here. So you have three different reasons. It's not necessarily that they're arguing, they're just giving different reasons why possibly over here the item would not be batel, and why our Mishnah would say that it isn't batel, and the tchumim govern from both parties. Right, we'll just finish off to the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim. Rabbi Yehuda says by water it doesn't matter, meaning that the tchumim don't impact water. Mayimin melachlo. Water, he says, is not considered to be significant. Why? Because the water disappears. When you make the bread, you can't see the water. Melachlo, but salt is not. V'atanya, don't we have a bright Rabbi Yehuda omer? Mayim v'melach b'telim. Ben b'isa ben b'ktera, water and salt are batel, because you can't see the salt either. So why aren't they both considered to be insignificant in this case? It says, Lokash, ha b'melach sdomit. One is talking about fine salt, melach sdomit, which is a very fine salt. Ha b'melach istrokanit, which is a coarse or thicker salt, which is visible. So the visible salt is not bavel versus the fine salt, which is batel, because it's like water. So that'll explain the difference in his opinion. Don't we have another brayta that says that water and salt are batel only in dough, but in a kdera, when you put them into a pot, into a cooked item, that they are not batel because mipnei rutba, because of the gravy. So lokasha haba'ava habiraka. Depends how thick it is. So if it's a very thick item, then the water and salt are batel even in kdera, because it looks like isa. Just like by isa, when you have a dough or bread afterwards, the water and the salt are not visible because they are mixed in so well that you can't see them. They're not distinct items that you could see. So because of that, they are batel. So in a kedera that is very thick, would say the same thing. A very thick item, the water is no longer visible, the salt is no longer visible, and you're out. In a more liquidy, thinner type of dish, then it's still watery, and the water and the salt still are, in a sense, visible or distinct. And in that case, it would not be batel. So the key element is, after the fact, what are you looking at? Are you looking at something that still has properties of water, properties of salt, and therefore it would not be batel? Or am I looking at something where the water and salt are completely now integrated into the item, where I can't see them and they're not distinct, and therefore they are batel, according to Rabbi Yehuda? And that will be the distinction between the different cases here. We have our Mishnah that says that Mayim is batel, Melach is not batel. We have a braita that says that both Mayim and Melach are batel. And we have another braita that says Mayim and Melach are batel in an Isa, but not in a Ktera. And each one of those will be determined by exactly this factor. How significant or how much can you realize of the item after the fact? The salt is fine, it's just like water, and it's gone. If the salt is thick or coarse, then it's distinct, and therefore it's different than water. An object, a cooked item that is thick, looks like dough, and the items are no longer visible, therefore they're batel. Whereas a thinner, more liquidy item still has properties of the water and the salt, and therefore they are not batel, because they're not like an isa, they're not like a dera ava. Okay, we'll stop over here.